It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Rosen Method Bodywork was developed out of Marian Rosen's 50 years experience as a physical therapist and health educator. Her unique approach to bodywork and movement has earned her recognition as a leader and originator in the field of body-oriented therapies. In the 1930s, Marian studied breath and relaxation in Munich, Germany, with Lucy Heyer, who had been trained by Elsa Gindler, a renowned innovator of body therapies. Licensed in physical therapy, both in Stockholm and at the Mayo Clinic, Marian developed the Rosen Method over the course of many years in private practice. Marian's purpose is to realize a vision of health and well-being by making the benefits of the Rosen Method widely available to the general public. Marian Rosen is a pioneer in the field of mind-body healing. She was one of the first to discover the relationship between our emotional lives and the condition of our bodies. She developed a system of bodywork so effective that clients release old emotional pain, their relationships improve, and their work life becomes better. She is dedicated to making the benefits of the Rosen Method available to the general public through practitioner training centers throughout the world and through her CDs and books, including Rosen Method Bodywork, Accessing the Unconscious Through Touch. Valerie Luoto is a Rosen Bodywork practitioner and teaches introductory workshops on the Rosen Method. Join us for the next hour as we explore the wonders of the Rosen Method with the creator, Marian Rosen. My name is Michael Toms. Joining me as co-host is Darson Nicholson, a master body worker. Welcome to New Dimensions. My guests are Marian Rosen, Valerie Luoto, and I want to introduce my co-host, Darsa. And so it's good to have you with us. Marian, I'd like to go into the background in your life. You've led a very, very adventurous life, and it goes way back. I want to go back to Europe in the 30s. Can you talk about that time?
Well, there is not much to say except it was a very different life before 1933, when Hitler came into power, and afterwards.
What was going on when before 1933 for you? What was going on?
Well, I had a wonderful life. I had a really very nice parents. I had nice siblings. I was the belle of the ball. I was flying high. I was dancing. I had a boyfriend. I had just everything.
And you were in Berlin?
No, I was in Nuremberg.
In Nuremberg.
Yes.
And so then 1933
Hitler came. Yes. And everything crashed. All of a sudden, my friends were not allowed to talk to me. My boyfriend was not supposed to be with me any longer. I was not allowed to go to school anymore. I was not allowed to study. I was an outcast from almost overnight.
This is because of your Jewish heritage?
Because of my Jewish heritage, yes. And I don't know what the life was like. The life went on as it was before, a very nice life, except for me and the family. For everybody who was Jewish, it was an incredibly hard time.
So then what happened? What happened? What took place for you?
For me, it happened that my father's friend from Sweden came and said, the girls, my sister and I, should not be in the country anymore, and took us to Sweden, took us away. And so we left. I left everything behind, what had happened, and was there somehow a different person than I was before. I've been gone through about 6 years of intense fear not only for my life, but especially for the life of my parents, that anybody could have done anything at any time without being punished or so.
So how long were you in Nuremberg after Hitler came to power before you left?
6 years.
6 years. Yes. So.
And they were very hard years. It was between being 19 and 25. Well, yeah, something like that, or 18 and 24.
So you never knew when a knock would come on the door or something could happen?
We never knew. There was, of course, this what they called the Kristallnacht, when the Nazis came and were destroying the homes of Jewish people and were arresting the men. I wasn't home at that time, only my mother and sister. And it happened that the people who came by were also former friends of ours and were careful. What they had to destroy was not too bad, you know, putting the piano on its side without injuring it and just breaking a few glasses that were there. But the fear of it was terrible. And it was after that that this man from Sweden came and picked us up. Said, you shouldn't be there anymore. Also, my father was in a train at that time, so nobody knew where he was. So he did not get arrested. So he was all right. But then, of course, our cars were taken away. His office of his work was taken away. They were going to take away our house. So there was really nothing we could do except, if possible, leave. And that was not easy. To go anywhere, because it made it very hard to go to other countries. But through this friend of my father's, Dr. Rudbeck, he could get us into Sweden.
So then you got into Sweden, and then what happened?
And I waited there for a year to get the permit to go to America. I wanted to go somewhere where I was free, where I could work, where I could do whatever I wanted to do, and where I was a full-fledged citizen again, possibly.
Did you have a sense of what kind of work you would do at that time?
I was already at that time doing some breathing and massage work that I'd learned in Germany from somebody who was not supposed to teach me, but who did it anyway, a Mrs. Heyer. Her husband was a psychiatrist, and she worked with him. They found out that when they got the people who got treated physically, much easier got in touch with their emotional difficulties. And so the treatments were much shorter and much more effective if they had that physical treatment at the same time. And that was when I was 22, 23 years old. So that was a long time before I finally did the work that I was doing.
So a year in Sweden, and then you got it. I think you caught a freighter. Is that it? You got on a freighter?
That's not a freighter, no. I took the train. We had to go through Russia and Japan in order to come over here, because the boat that was taking us would not go anymore because the Germans had invaded Norway. There were no boats going. So in order to come here, I had to go over the Eastern Way. And there was another young friend of mine who was about 6 years younger, and who had his parents also in America. He said, why don't you come? Let's try and get to America that way. And so we took the train to Moscow, first to Leningrad and to Moscow, and then the railway through Russia. It was about a 9-day trip. So we came to Vladivostok. And then in Vladivostok, we got picked up by a Japanese freighter, took us to Yokohama. From Yokohama, we took a train again. No, we came to Osaka, we came. And then we went by train to Yokohama. And there we got a boat to San Francisco. And I was really on my way to New York because there was a job waiting for me. So to work with this kind of massage and breathing. Mrs. Lederer was working there. And she said she could have some work for me if I come there. And I was going to go there. But then my relatives who lived in Berkeley picked me up. And when I see Berkeley, I said, that is it. I'm never going to leave here. And I didn't. It was just what I needed. Job or no job, this is where I belonged. And I still belong there. Yeah, it is my home.
So what was it, you think, that pulled you to Berkeley? What was it that kind of grabbed you? Was there something specific you remember?
I remember the beauty of it, that it is. And I remember there was a freedom about it. In the way it was, the way you felt when you were there.
So this would have been 1940.
1940, yes.
So even then it was the People's Republic of Berkeley.
Yes, yes, it was absolutely wonderful. Yeah, it was wonderful. And so the first week I stayed with my relatives, I tried to get a job, and it was a babysitter. So I was a babysitter and I had to cook for the people. And I burned about every other dinner that they made for them because cooking was not my thing. But they liked me because I said, I talked to their son who was 3 years old and very difficult, but I never got angry at him. So I talked to him with a friendly voice and they liked that. But then I started at that time going around working and treating people, whatever I knew from Mrs. Heyer, with breathing and massage. And at that time I went from place to place by bus, because I didn't have a car, and made just enough money to pay for my home and board with my relatives. I stayed there. But then one of the other people that were there said, oh, I know that there's a hospital that needs some people to work there, some physical therapists. And so I wasn't a physical therapist, but I was sort of related to it. They asked me if I could work there. And then for about 3 years, I worked in the hospital there, the Kaiser Permanente Hospital. But I didn't get paid as much as the others because I didn't have an official American training. And that is when I got tired of that and I said I would like to get trained. And then I heard that the Mayo Clinic offered a free training at that time because they needed physical therapists. So I went there for about 6 months.
This would have been in Minnesota.
It was in Minnesota.
Yes.
And got a training at the Mayo Clinic. And it was about, I think we had a 10 hours a day training because they tried to speed it up. And then I had to work also to make a living. And so I worked as a waitress with a place very close by. And enjoyed that tremendously. So if I hadn't been what I am now, I would have been a very good waitress, I guess.
You're listening to Marian Rosen, and we're also here with Valerie Luoto and my co-host,
Darsa Nicholson.
And you're listening to New Dimensions. We're speaking with Marian Rosen, founder of the Rosen Method, body work, much more than body work, actually, body, mind, spirit, soul, psyche, a whole lot more. And we're also here with one of her close associates and colleagues, Valerie Luoto, and also my co-host, Darsa Nicholson, who's also been my body worker for 20 years. And it might be useful or interesting, I think, for both you, Valerie, and Darsa, for you to talk about how you got connected to Marian's work.
I want to speak to the probably most important information that I got from Marian Rosen. And I don't know if it was 1968 or 71, but I remember reading that Marian had said, bodies never lie. And as a young massage therapist in Iowa City, when I was doing massage, it was the body that gave me the information about what was happening, not what was coming out of someone's mouth, but how the tissue felt. And now, all these many years later, in these intensives, I watch this, and I don't want to say magician, because we all have that ability to be magicians, touching tissue and speaking to the body, moving it very gently, very slowly, with observation and listening hands. And I guess my question is, if it's even a question, it's just an asking for you to talk a little bit more about how your hands inform you.
I could do it now, but maybe you should ask my colleague, Valerie, first, how she came to the work.
Okay. I'm Valerie, and I met Marian about maybe 17, 18 years ago. A friend of mine from Norway suggested that I go and watch her work because she felt our work was similar. I was already a masseuse like you, Darsa. And when I saw Marian put her hand on someone, I knew that there was something very different about her work. It wasn't from the head. It was really grounded in following the person that she was touching. Then she was my practitioner for a year and a half, and then I decided to study the Rosen work. And it's been a wonderful journey.
First we were teacher and pupil, now we are colleagues, and that is really very wonderful. Very successful colleagues.
So let's go back to your touch and your soft and listening hands and they're informing the therapy.
So it would be good if you ask a little bit more directly what you want to know about that.
Pain. Today you said that if the pain in the body ever goes away, ever stops, the pain's not necessary.
I said it a little bit different, I said, you know. But I said, of course, if the pain is not there all the time, it is not necessarily to be there. Because there is some factor there that could make it not painful. And so we have to find that factor. What is there that makes it not painful?
And often that's the breath?
No. No, it's not the breath itself. It is the feeling that people get in touch with. What was the experience? What is the experience that really hurt me? That hurt me so much? And then suppress it. Because we cannot handle it at the time that we experienced it. And then the suppression itself causes the muscle to tense. And I think it is the tension of the muscles that then causes the pain. So when people get in touch with what they had experienced, and maybe can talk about it, they do not have to repress it. So all this muscle tension is then not necessary anymore. And apparently that is a factor that makes the pain go away. But I'm not certain about this. It is what I think about it. But the fact is that the pain goes away.
And you have amazing stories.
Yes, there are amazing stories about it. Yes, I would love to tell you a few, but is that the
time?
Yeah,
go ahead, please, yes.
The one thing was a lady came who was supposed to have a hip replacement because of her hip pain. And she had heard about me for some reason. She was 79 at the time. And she came in with a cane, you know, very difficult walking. And so I worked on her. And I worked as I usually do, you know, with the, around the area where the tight muscles are. And also asked her about her life. And everything in her life was wonderful. So there was really no reason for her, for anything. But I kept working with her. And then all of a sudden, she got a little sad. And then she talked about something that had happened, that one of the people that she had trained and was a very wonderful person had done something that was very non-ethical, which hurt her very much. And as she said that, she started to cry. And the tears just rolled down. And so I asked her, I said, are you aware that you're crying? And she said, I'm not crying. I just said, it's very wet around here, you know. And then she really cried and said how much it had hurt her. And that is something that she really couldn't quite handle, that it was something that sat on her that was so bad. And that was really all. And the muscles that I was working on seemed to soften. And I felt that there was not much tension around the hip at that point. Anyway, she got up and got dressed, and then she walked out and she forgot her cane. And I said, what about the cane? And she said, oh! And she said, the hip doesn't hurt. So with this one treatment, she got in touch with what had hurt her so much and was able to say something about it and to get the feeling of it. And the pain went away. So she went out swinging the cane instead of putting her weight on it. And I followed her for the next about at least 15 years. Now she's in her 90s. She's 3 years older than I am, so that is there. And whenever there came a slight pain again, she would come. And we would work on her, and the pain would go away again. So she never had the replacement done. That was one of my success stories that came in here.
Do you think it's possible to regenerate tissue, Marian?
I think there's some tissue that regenerates and some others that doesn't. For instance, cartilage does not regenerate. But I think tissue does regenerate.
So with the knee situation, she had a hip situation, but with the knee where you have where you don't have any cartilage, is the only resort to knee replacement, or do you have another solution?
Well, sometimes the pain does not come from the cartilage only. There's many people who don't have a cartilage.
Yes.
And don't have pain. If the cartilage is sort of stuck in the joint, then you have to have it replaced or have it taken out. But sometimes it is enough to relax the musculature around it. So instead of pulling the joint together and having it scrape, you really have space for the joint to move. And then you don't have pain. And then you don't need anything else. So sometimes just the relaxation of it will make a difference.
Can create space.
Can create space, yeah. The space that's necessary. Yeah.
What about another story? Do you have another story?
Oh, I have many stories.
Many stories.
Yes.
Well, tell us another one.
The other story that I thought was very important was somebody who had a migraine headache for 30 years. And she came to a class, and she wanted to be worked on. And so I worked on her. And as I was working on her, I asked her, when did it start? About 30 years ago. And what happened at that time? Well, I broke up with my boyfriend. I said, aha, that's what it was. But there was no reaction in her body when she said that. There was nothing that happened. Then there was something else that she said, besides that, which I cannot remember now. But again, the body did not react.
No color, no breath change.
Nothing,
no.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. And then all of a sudden, there was something different. And I said, what happened? There must have been something else. And then, oh yes, she said, you fell off her bicycle. And this is why she had the headache. And I know now that falling off a bicycle, you don't have headaches for 30 years. No. But then she started to sort of cry a bit. And then she said, I had an abortion. And I said, did you tell your boyfriend you had the abortion or had to be pregnant? And she said, I have not told anybody that I had the abortion. And then she said, even crying more, she said, I'm talking to this being every day of my life. I've missed her. I would now have a 30-year-old child. And I gave that up and is not there. And I have the pain about it every minute of my life. And this is all she said. And then she started to cry really, really loud. And so, and there was nothing else about that, but just that pain. And that was all we could do, you know. And then, again, she was getting up. And she said, my head doesn't hurt. First time in 30 years that the head didn't hurt.
You're listening to Marian Rosen, the founder and creator of the Rosen Method. And we're also here with Valerie Luoto, one of her close colleagues, been with her for 17 years, and also my co-host, Darsa Nicholson. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. Guest on New Dimensions is Marian Rosen, the founder and creator of the Rosen Method. And Marian has trained hundreds of people all over the world in her work. We're also here with Valerie Luoto, and that's Luoto, who's been a close colleague of Marian for some years, and also my co-host, Darsa Nicholson. And Valerie, you were going to talk about Marian's work, and so you might want to give I think you have a question you wanted to ask her.
I think it's very interesting how the work came about, that Marian, you became a physical therapist, and then through many, many years of work and keen observation, you realized you could make most people feel better, at least for a little while, but some people actually got better, and you started to wonder about that. And I think that it was out of that observation that was the birth of Rosen Method.
It's not quite that way.
Okay.
I was a physical therapist for 35 years because when I came to this country, nobody was interested in this other funny work that I was doing, that I had learned in Germany. But I had trained in physical therapy while I was in Sweden. And so I could do some physical therapy and work that way. And I worked privately, and I worked at the Kaiser Hospital for 3 years. But then one day, the daughter of a friend of mine came and said, why don't you teach me what you learned in Germany that year? And so I said, no, I've never taught. And then I thought it over and called her back, and I said, I've never done it before. But if you don't mind, then I'll just see what happens if I teach you. So I worked with Sarah Webb. This was a girl, she was a friend of my daughter's, and worked on her and had some other people come that she worked on. She had some friends come in that she worked on. And as she worked on them and as I worked on them, things happened with these people. And what happened was that very often they started to cry. Very often they remembered things of their lives that had hurt them a lot. And they, all kinds of things happened. And I couldn't really understand what it is. But the fact was they felt so much better afterwards. And they told others about it. So all of a sudden, more of their friends came. And there were so many friends that we couldn't take care of all of them. They wanted to be treated just the way we did, with a soft hand and with the breath coming in. And as she started to talk then about what had hurt them a lot, they very often lost pain that they had. Of course, with a physical therapist, many people came in with pain. And I treated them, and the pain would come back again after a certain time. So I always knew there was something else, but I couldn't quite think of what it could have been. But when they started talking about it and getting the feeling what had happened that was there, they seemed to lose the pain, and then it wouldn't come back. So that got more and more interesting. And then after about 2 years, I thought that was all I had done for Sarah, and she probably could do the work herself. And then there were other people who wanted to. I want to learn this too. There was especially a niece of mine who lived in Sweden and who had had physical therapy with Hans Axelsson at his institute there. And she came to this country to learn what I had to teach. And I thought it was very boring to just teach one person at a time. So I said it would be all right if I had more people come. And so I started my first class. I think it was in 1979 or something. And there were about 10 people in it. And I trained them as much as I knew how. I showed them what I was doing. And just the same way as I had done with Sarah. And more things happened with people, you know, with their being, feeling better, remembering things, very often being very sad, sometimes being very happy, something happened. But anything that they had not thought of in a long time, and they were excited about recovering things out of their unconscious, that all of a sudden would come up for them. And when they made that contact, they seemed to get better. And they seemed to feel better. Everything seemed to change. Out of these 10 people that I trained, I think 7 of them are still teachers now. So it was exciting for them enough. And that was in 1971, I think. I started with Sarah in maybe 1979 that I started the class, long before I met Valerie. This came later.
And this was in Berkeley.
It was all in Berkeley.
It's interesting that roughly the same time, Moshe Feldenkrais was here in the Bay Area doing trainings.
That's right.
How would you compare your work to his work?
Well, see, I didn't know about anything else. I didn't know at that time that anybody else was working that way. And it was also getting in touch with yourself, but in a very different way. So whatever we did was really not the same. And then I heard there were other people too, like Traeger, you know, doing things. And whoever else was at that time. There were many different disciplines, mm-hmm. and I'd never known about them. So I cannot really say how they compared, because I don't know enough about them. You only know about them when you take them, you know, when you experience them. But I could only say what I experienced and what happened when I worked with people. And there was more and more things. In the beginning, it was a great excitement when people cried. I thought it was absolutely wonderful when they started crying. And then I was in Sweden one day and came in the room, and everybody was crying. There were about 60 people crying. And it was like in a nursery, you know, all the, and I said, that can't be all. You know, there must be something else that's going on with this. And so I started looking, what else, you know, is really happening there? And then we felt, when they got in touch with whatever happened to them, that not only did they cry, there was a lot of change that took place. So then, you know, more things happened with people, becoming in touch not only with their sadness, but also with their possibilities. And what happened then, they got in touch with sometimes that they have much more abilities than they knew, that they had put away, that they became much more effective when they were working. And then the most important thing was that their relationships changed. That sometimes they had sad experiences in love, that they'd been left or been very badly hurt. And so their body had really a protective covering around them. And this covering kept them from getting hurt again, but it also kept them from feeling when they're being loved, and from their ability to show others how they're loved. So when people came, and very often the complaint was, I'm married and so, and I cannot get close to the person that I'm with, and it's a very nice person, and I cannot get close. And so I would ask them, did you have a previous experience? And they said, yes, it was awful. They did such and such, and I really suffered in this. And as I would say that, their holding behind the heart there would soften, and would all of a sudden, the body would change, and would change to be a more pliable, open, you know, receptive body. And then they would say, oh my, it's very different now. Or the other part of the couple would say, oh, it's so wonderful now, you know, we really can get together. We understand each other. So that happened, and that was a very big thing that happened. What's happening now, also later, that was the next thing, I guess, to all of a sudden see that people really are different, you know, can live differently and do that. And then there came the next thing, is also that they take who they were into the world. That it made them make a big difference to their surrounding. It made a difference to the surrounding in their family. It made a difference in their surrounding, in their work. It made a difference just with whoever they were together.